Jan talked a little bit about agriculture. What I'm going to talk about are wetlands. And some of you who aren't from the West might wonder why we're talking about wetlands in an agronomy conference. And as Les mentioned, our wetlands, as well as our agriculture, is supplied water from the Delta. So actually, a lot of our wetlands, we have very few natural wetlands left in California. Most of our wetlands are managed wetlands and supplied, in this case, with water from the Delta. And this work is actually somewhat of an offshoot from work that I did with Les about 10 years ago. Les and I worked on this concept of real-time water quality management, and I sort of kept going with that idea over the past 10 years. So the area we're talking about is on the west side of the San Joaquin, and it's in that salinity-affected west side. And the area I'm going to be talking about specifically is about 170,000 acres, which sits just south of the Merced River, which is in this region over here of the San Joaquin. There are two major discharges into the San Joaquin, a mud and salt slough, and the regulation for salt occurs at a place called Vinales, which is just below where the Stanislaus River comes in. This is what these wetlands look like. As I said, they constitute about 170,000 acres. And institutionally, they're sort of complicated because we've got three types of management or management entity that exist out there. We have state-run wetlands managed by the Department of Fish and Game, federal wetlands managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and then a number of duck clubs, 160 of them to be to be precise, which essentially gives us 160 different managers out there. So part of our challenge in real-time water quality management, and Les brought this up, and that is sort of coordination. These people are part of a coalition, but their coalition is actually an ag coalition, and their objectives as wetland managers are somewhat different from agriculture. However, they do import water during the fall, around about September, and they drain their water, their ponded water, between the months of February and April each year. And so they do contribute salt to the San Joaquin River, and hence they are regulated. Now, as I mentioned, we've got three different types of wetland management in terms of institutions that go out there, but diversity is very important for these wetlands. And the type of grasses that you grow out in these wetlands has a lot to do with the type of waterfowl that you attract. And if you want diversity of waterfowl and shorebirds, then you need a diversity of grasses. And these are probably the three most important grasses that we have in this watershed: smartweed, swamp timothy, and watergrass. And as I mentioned, these are basically, the water supply comes into these wetlands in September. They flooded it to an average level of between about 10 inches and a foot. That lasts through about February. The smartweed is drained first, and then comes the swamp timothy, and lastly the watergrass. And that has a lot to do with the temperature, the competitiveness of these particular types of forbs, related to invasive weeds. And, you know, I mean, this is a rule of thumb. Every year is a little different. And this is something that's somewhat of an art, and it's not well documented. Typically, after you have the drainage occurring, there will be 1 to 3 irrigations that occur, depending on water. And those will occur in May, June, and sometimes as late as July. And usually there's very little return flow to the river in those irrigations. And this is what these wetlands look like at the time of wetland drawdown. And Les has already talked about some of these, but Boron and salt, these are the primary constituents of concern, at least in my studies. Let's also mention that there are two different water quality objectives, the 700 EC objective between April and August, which is the irrigation season, and 1,000 EC for the non-irrigation season, which is pretty much regarded as August through April. And basically, those have to be met at that Vernalis compliance monitoring station. So this concept of real-time water quality management is basically using the simulated capacity of the river so we can safely discharge contaminant loads, in this case salt, under less onerous regulatory constraints than a strict TMDL. A strict TMDL with its margins of safety and its use of the lowest 10% hydrologic condition is actually quite punitive. Les made the comment that, you know, part of the reason for putting in these base load conditions in the TMDL was to push the watershed into real-time management, meaning more cooperation, more sharing of data, and essentially trying to time your east side good quality releases from your reservoirs with the major salt export from the west side. And part of the motivation is that we felt, as part of our preliminary work that was done, that both wetland discharges and ag discharges had what we thought was an unrealized flexibility of operation. That was actually proved in the selenium TMDL, that when pushed, both farmers and, we think, wetland managers will be able to demonstrate some ingenuity in managing their return flows, their salt loads to the river. Of course, this is predicated on having appropriate monitoring, and that's essentially what this project helped to do. So what is real-time management? Well, this is a simple illustration. You've got here the simulated capacity of the San Joaquin in this shaded color. You essentially got the salt loads that are generated by North Grasslands as this this wavy line. You notice there's plenty of assimilative capacity. Remember, North Grassland wetlands are not the only salt exporters. There's a lot of agriculture in the basin, and Les showed, I think, an average of about a 10% salt load over the year contributed by these wetlands. However, in this period, when the wetlands drain, which is between February and April, you can see some of those wetland salt loads can constitute a good portion of the assimilative capacity in the river. And where we have these overages, for instance here and here, we have a situation where if we could move that salt load either earlier or later, we could actually do a better job of meeting objectives. So some of the prerequisites for real-time water quality management: you need a flow and water quality control infrastructure. You need some means of being able to manage those salt loads being exported to the river. You need both a monitoring system and a means, an institutional means of exerting that control. And these institutions need to collaborate not only amongst themselves, in our case, it'd be the state, federal, and private entities, but also coordinate with the rest of the watershed, because the east side of the watershed is providing the similar capacity. And so the overall vision of this work is the development of a public domain, web-accessible decision support system used to forecast San Joaquin River simulated capacity and wetland salinity loading. And the key words here are coordination and cooperation between wetland managers who don't have a history of working together, leading to increased compliance with objectives. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, we've installed close to 50 monitoring stations within these wetlands and in the environs. We've actually seen a lot of change in technology. Prices have come down. The types of sensors we have available have really improved. And those of you who've wandered downstairs to some of the vendors have seen just an explosion in electronic sensing devices that have become a whole lot more affordable in the last few years. We need some type of salinity management model to assist wetland managers with their spring drawdown. Until about 4 or 5 years ago, there was no monitoring in this watershed. And so we have to tread very slowly and very carefully and keep our stakeholders, basically keep their interests at heart and not sort of get too far ahead, but also develop the sorts of tools that they would want to use. And I've made some mistakes in the past, getting involved in very sort of graphic decision support systems, only to have our computers used as doorstops, or our keyboards sort of used because they're better keyboards. But it's very easy to fall into that trap, and I've been there before. So, and I'll show you in the next slide just a simple spreadsheet that we've started to use. We've started implementation. I mean, most of the work over the last 5 or 6 years has been just to get monitoring on the ground and pick up some of the initial data. But we've now started just a very small-scale implementation of the concept, and I'll show you some slides on that. And then one of the important things that we did that went along with this implementation, and that was develop some assurances in the way of developing satellite imagery and doing real-time soil EM surveys, basically looking at soil salinity within these wetlands that had never been looked at, so that we can assess the impacts of doing some of this delayed drawdown on long-term habitat health and sustainability. What we don't want to do is sort of push these guys into a way of operating that's basically going to cause long-term harm. And as most of you know, soil salinity is insidious. Its effects aren't felt the first year or the second year, some years down the road. This is an example of the telemetry systems that we're putting out there. These are have a lot smaller footprint than a lot of the monitoring that we've done in the past. This essentially provides 15-minute data on the web. So we can go onto our computers and pick up salinity information, temperature information, velocity and stage information that allows us to get good flow numbers and salt loads. As most of you know, working in this sort of environment, getting good flow numbers is really difficult. It's very easy to get water quality data, but getting good flow data in a wetland, or in this type of environment that's very biological and has lots of things with teeth, is quite difficult. An example of the sort of modeling we're doing: these folks use spreadsheets. We want to keep our models simple, and we want these folks to use them. So they need to understand our models. They need to understand what's in them. As I mentioned, there are a lot of human factors that we've got to consider. Engineers, and I'm one of that, I'm not an agronomist, but we tend to forget sometimes some of the human factors. If we want people to adopt our technology, we've got to consider some of these things. I've already mentioned that we've got institutional constraints. Federal and state agencies have a lot of autonomy. Everyone answers to a boss. They decide, how things are going to get managed. But private wetland managers, we've got 160 of them, we've got 160 decision makers, 160 boards, 160 highly individualistic folks out there. And so to get them to see things our way, we will require a lot of persuasion. Private entities aren't as well funded as the state and federal agencies, so we need incentive programs. And we also probably need the regional board to work with us, creating some sort of transition period. Agriculture had about 20 years to adapt to the selenium limits under the TMDL. these guys only had monitoring about 2 or 3 years ago. So so there's essentially going to be more sort of required. I mentioned that we need these assurances. We need to sort of understand that if some of these management practices are put into place, you know, what are the potential impacts on habitat quality and sustainability? Accurate soil salinity and vegetation maps are ways in which we can do that, and there have been lots of talks at this conference on this sort of technology. Here we have two of our study sites. One is essentially our treatment, where we're keeping the water back about, on average, 2 to 3 weeks, and draining 2 to 3 weeks later. And the other is using traditional practices, traditional wetland drainage. We're using a medical imaging software called eCognition, essentially to categorize about 26 different types of vegetation. We've got about a 75% accuracy when we do that. We've got more than 90% accuracy if we just look at swamp timothy or not swamp timothy. This is very impressive software, and you know, we've in about our third year now of doing this sort of work. So the idea is to get a baseline of the type of vegetation out there, and then every year to go back and see how things have changed. And if they start reporting lesser acreages of those beneficial types of grasses, then we know that we're potentially in trouble. And that's part of the reason we have that control, the traditional practice. And so we hope to be able to do this over a period of maybe about 10 years. We have 12 sites altogether, six pairs of sites, and this is just an image just showing the presence of swamp timothy and not swamp timothy in each of these areas. And we're in our third year now of doing some of these comparisons. I mentioned we were also doing soil salinity mapping, and I see Florence in the audience. Florence, this is you when you were sort of helping us with some of our first trials. We've done, we've actually resorted to doing a lot of this stuff by foot, just because we end up sort of trampling some of the grasses out there, and we've done a lot of biological monitoring that's been handled by a grad student at UC Davis. And when we run our tractor over these grasses, it sort of knocks his seed heads out and it destroys his experiment. So we've had to go, you know, to a more primitive technology, but are getting good data. This is an example actually from some of the previous work in the National Wildlife Refuge, but showing some of the salinity maps that in a, you know, what could be a treatment and basically a traditional field. And then the idea is that every year we go back and then we look to see if we get in soil salinity changes. So in summary, these wetlands have no option but to drain into the San Joaquin. A lot of agriculture on the west side is looking at reusing a lot of their water, minimizing their return flows, and they can probably do that for a period of time. These wetlands would basically cease to be in existence if they didn't drain to the river. So really they have no choice but to develop you know, some sort of management, and this idea of real-time water quality management, where they get to use more of the similar capacity of the river, is very attractive. It'll require real-time water quality management, will require integration of the data acquisition, the data processing. There's going to be model forecasting required, and therefore models need to be developed. And then most importantly, information dissemination and ultimately decision support. The information dissemination, you know, we're trying to use the web as much as we can, but you know, we have to work side by side with these folks, and we'll probably take a few wrong turns along the way. A full TMDL compliance, I actually wrote in here 14 years initially, but I think it's probably going to be more like 5, but I think it'll probably take about 14 years before, you know, we have a system that is in sort of full compliance with the regional board's ideas. And cooperation, coordination between all these entities is going to be very important. So That's it. Thanks.